Guess what, America? Millennials and Gen Z support socialism. Yes, they do. And we're going to talk about that in podcast 798, the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, listen up, because I'm going to tell you how to get the Bob Davis Podcasts. If you have an Android, I'm going to recommend Google Play. I'm going to recommend Spotify. And I'm going to leave Stitcher.com in the dust, because there have been some issues with Androids and Stitcher.com. You can get the podcasts at TuneIn. You can get the podcasts at iTunes. TuneIn works with Alexa. And of course, you can always get the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page at the Bob Davis Podcast with streaming, or by choosing an individual podcast and clicking on the play button. You can also subscribe right underneath the play button as well. And I do appreciate the likes, but especially the shares on social media and favoriting and following me on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thank you, Sue, for... I think she sent me $25 or $40. I don't remember it. I really appreciate that. That gets right in the account for hopefully when we get ready to move with Mobile Podcast Command. Now, another thing we're doing at the Bob Davis Podcast is we're working with a payment processor, part of the payment processing revolution in this country. If you are a small business or a medium-sized business, really a large business, you want to work with a company that can develop integrated solutions, meaning creative solutions to work with the systems that you have, and that is ReliaFund. They have been around. They're at the very beginning of the payment processing revolution in this country, because when it's easier to pay, it's better for everyone. ReliaFund does that, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. ReliaFund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. They can work with your developer to put in a payment processing system that works behind the website to take care of your payments, and they will do that. If you're developing an e-commerce website, they can help you with developing that or your back office stuff. And if you call ReliaFund, you will deal with an actual human being, either Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill, and they are great. No long-term contracts, secure, technology-focused. Here's the number, 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D.com. The last podcast I did, podcast 797, got some great response. This was sort of a long, rambling discussion, part of which, and it was what I call an easy talker podcast, where I just open the mics and talk without any real notes. And the gist of it was that we're in the end game for the United States if you view the United States based on its original structure as a representative republic and as a capitalist country, a country with a capitalist economic and social system. And the reason I brought it up is that I see a lot of evidence to suggest that younger people support what is referred to as democratic socialism, which is a decidedly different economic system from capitalism. And in the process, they tend to view the Constitution as some relic of the past, and they are in the process of legally constructing a superstructure of a pure democracy onto a structure which can be referred to as a representative republic or a democratic republic. And I think that's very interesting. I'm not going to make arguments against socialism. I am not going to sit here and tell people why they're wrong, because I don't feel that that's my job. And I feel that that is advocacy, media, which is a mistake. And also, I feel that people who don't agree with that type of system, and again, I'm not going to make a value judgment, need to start working on developing really the intellectual arguments against it and really the intellectual arguments for capitalism, if that's what you want, because there is a great wave of younger people who will soon be the middle-aged adults in this country with children and everything else. And they have a decidedly different view of the Constitution and a decidedly different view of history. And we're going to talk about that in this podcast. So I mentioned in the last podcast that there's a great deal of support from younger demographics for what can only be referred to as state-centered solutions to perceived social problems. So some of the things that they favor: free national single-payer health insurance, free education for at least 2 years, so free community college at the least, and I would throw in there free student loans, and support for measures to address global warming and social inequality and racism and so forth. Here are just a few of the numbers, because people said, Here are a few of the numbers. And if you're a Gen Z person, which is the generation just following the millennials, you know, or a millennial, you know this. I don't need to tell you this, but for people who are a little older, and particularly for baby boomers and older, this can come as a shock. So 39% of 18 to 29-year-olds support democratic socialism. That's probably a little light in terms of percentage. 66% preferred democratic control of Congress in 2018. They were more likely to vote in 2018. And of course, that was the outcome of the 2018 midterms. A majority gave President Trump low approval ratings before the election and continue to. And again, those numbers in terms of voting appeared long before the election. So this is not something that should have surprised Republicans anywhere. According to a Harvard University study, 56% support, and this is 56% of younger people support a federal jobs guarantee. 55% support making college tuition free for families making up to $125,000 a year combined income. 55% support single-payer health insurance. 40% of 18 to 29-year-olds support forcing companies with more than $1 billion in revenue to have about half their boards of directors appointed by the company's workers. 37% support building a militant and powerful labor movement rooted in a multiracial working class. 24% support a taxpayer finance campaign finance system. 17% of younger voters say that they would definitely vote for New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the new poster child for what these kinds of things are considered, which is reforms. 75% of Democrats overall would support a candidate for President Cortez if she was at least 35 years old. She is not, and you have to be at least 35 to run for president, according to that hoary old document, the United States Constitution. Cortez, and to a lesser extent, Texas Congressman and former Senate candidate in Texas, Beto O'Rourke, get approval ratings as good or better than Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. 2020's candidate roster for Democrats include a majority of progressive candidates, some below 40, some about 40, generally younger. And as I suggested in podcast 797, if all this results in spending and borrowing more, with the idea that we get money from billionaires with a 70% tax on the highest incomes, or by injecting money into the economic system, a nicer term for printing money with no end, it all sounds really good. So if you doubt me, check out hashtag mint the coin. That's one word, mint the coin. It is the idea of minting a $1 trillion coin to pay for reforms. Proponents of this type of thing, and it has been generally referred to, although I don't know if mint the coin is modern monetary theory, but it has been generally referred to as MMT, and it is supported by people who have worked with Senator Bernie Sanders, like Stephanie Kelton, who's an economist at the University of Missouri in Kansas, who's been described as whip smart and enthusiastic, Dean Baker, who founded the Center for Economic and Policy Research. MMT is a way to pay, and I use pay in quotes, for what is described as reform. Yes, it is controversial, but the fact is there's an intellectual academic theory, working theory that can be used to discuss this in a political milieu. MMT is a way to pay for what is described as reform, solving the most pressing problems for those who do not benefit from our quote-unquote economic system, or they don't benefit from the economic growth promoted by and supported by a generally Republican rhetoricians and are not in the so-called middle or upper income brackets, the disenfranchised for whatever reason. Another idea is the consumption tax to fund a universal basic income for all, regardless of an income bracket. So the UBC is sold by suggesting it would replace all assistance programs. More than likely, support for UBC would result in Congress for a UBC that would basically be funded by a flat value-added tax, a VAT tax, which is common in European socialist countries and across the EU. It would be tacked onto a progressive tax system, and social welfare programs would continue with the UBC. And I would imagine that the UBC would eventually be funded with a progressive VAT tax as well. So if you made a lot of money, then that income would be redistributed. Now, you know how much I hate talk of political spectrums. I think they are one of the worst things in media coverage. I think it's one of the biggest problems in politics, where people are labeled this or that, and people on the right are looked at as a certain way, and people on the left are looked at as a certain way, and most of them embrace their position on the political spectrum. But the political spectrum in this country is fluid, and it really doesn't describe what we are dealing with in terms of politics in 2020 in particular, and probably beyond, and in fact in 2018 and in 2016. For years, Republicans and so-called conservatives had called the left bankrupt, and they've always said, where's the idea? They don't have any ideas. We're the party. The Republicans always say, we're the party of thought and we're the party of ideas. Well, now what is called the political left clearly have some ideas, and those ideas have political support. And I think that's very, very, very important. And it's not just a little bit of political support. And for people to say, well, it's only 40% or it's 39% or whatever. So if there's enough support, then that gives you the basic critical mass to actually introduce these ideas rhetorically and through political speech and to clean them up by wrapping it all up into a multicultural, multiracial, adherent to gender activist standards, working class sort of populism, which promises kindness and caring for all and open borders and solving these long-term problems that we've had in this country. And you have an agenda full of ideas. Is there any opposition to so-called socialism? And if so, what are the arguments against such a system? Right? First of all, we're going to start with what is socialism. And again, I am not going to make arguments against socialism because that's up to the people who oppose it. This idea of laying down, if you consider yourself a quote unquote conservative, and I'm going to blow that up in a second too, or a Republican, if you just lay down and let somebody else make the arguments, well, that's not going to work. So what I find in the circles that I am in and with the people I talk to is they can't make arguments against these things because no longer is the Republican Party a Republican Party of thought or of ideas. It has become a red-faced, name-calling, because we said so kind of political party. And I'm going to talk about why that has happened. It's a party without principle for the most part. And that is true in state governments, and it's true at the national level as well. We'll just leave that alone for the time being. And it's not a partisan political criticism. I think it's an important criticism. Socialism is a political and economic theory of social organization which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Now, when it comes to social economic theory, these few paragraphs from Investopedia, and I'll throw a link up on the blog, I think describe it very well. In contrast to capitalism, socialists believe shared ownership of resources and central planning offer a more equitable distribution of goods and services. In short, they hold that workers who contribute to economic output should expect a commensurate reward. This sentiment crystallized in the socialist slogan, "From each according to their ability, to each according to their need." And in a capitalist economy, market determines price through laws of supply and demand. Under a true socialist system, it's the government's role to determine output and pricing levels. The challenge is synchronizing these decisions with the needs of consumers. By the way, two things. First of all, people misconstrue socialism or confuse socialism with communism. Socialism is not the ownership of all the means of production. That is communism. So in other words, in communism, the means of production are owned exclusively by, quote unquote, the people. And in socialism, it's really about the control of the means of production and exchange. Yes, you can own the means of exchange to a certain degree in socialism, but really the key word here is regulation. So I think that's really, really important to point out. Also, socialism and communism being different systems, in Marxist theory, socialism is a transitional social state between the overthrow of capitalism and the realization of communism. Now, in the second half of this podcast, I'm going to ask, where are the arguments against socialism? Or better yet, what are the arguments for capitalism? Because if you run in certain circles these days, you don't hear those arguments. And I think that's a hugely important thing to talk about. I do not drink the tap water in my town. And there's a lot of reasons for it. I don't think it tastes very good. It makes terrible coffee. I could give you a whole list of things. But really, it's the possible pollution from decades ago in a lot of towns around the metropolitan area here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Also, they put toxins in it that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless to make it safe to drink. So I spend a lot of money, I think too much money, on bottled water. And then there is issue with bottled waters, too, that people don't know. So it's important to talk about the Water Butler water purification systems because there's solutions to this. And this is the Water Butler. Joe Berg at the Water Butler was telling me that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. And when I heard it, it's amazing. Here's the deal. It is affordable. So the Water Butler can put a water purification system in for your whole house, or they can just put something under the sink so you can get tap water that is very, very pure. They can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever by simply calling the Water Butler. That's Joe Berg at 763-286-8328. Especially important if you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka. Tonka, it is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. 68 years of experience with plumbing, so they're not going to screw that stuff up. 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. Call the Water Butler, 763-286-8328. That's 763-286-8328. Or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. End your dependence on bottled water forever today. Well, all the talk in the news today and these days in general about tariffs has screwed up foreign manufacturing in a lot of different ways. And companies are a little confused about what they are supposed to do to deal with potential tariffs that would prevent them from manufacturing overseas. And so some companies are bringing some of their production back to the U.S. If this is you, consider American manufacturing. Buy Depot Star. They do design. They do engineering. They do manufacturing. They do medical devices. They do electronics and other stuff. And they are great. Visit their website at depotstar.com, D-E-P-O-T-S-T-A-R, Depot Star.com. So I'll throw links to socialism and its definitions in the blog at thebobdavispodcast.com. But I think these definitions, the definitions I just read, describe pretty well the existing social structure of the United States, although I'm not saying that we're wholly socialist. I'm saying that we have tacked on socialist structures to our government in total since the 1930s. So if you look at the all of the legislation, what people could call socially activist legislation since the 1930s, what do we have? Well, we have a minimum wage or labor price controls. We have control of business through regulation. We have control of business, significant control of business through unelected boards, Federal Reserve and executive departments. I was at a business networking recently and somebody got up to talk about human relations consulting. And he said, even if you have one employee and you have a small business and you have one employee, you have to comply with at least 12 federal laws regarding that employee. And unless you have a manual that allows you to discipline that employee, you can't technically discipline that employee. And that is nothing compared to the regulation concerning a business that involves chemicals or involves, you know, any kind of environmental stuff. And there are all sorts of controls all down the line, labor controls, HR controls, healthcare controls, and so forth. So there is a great deal of control of business through regulation. Also, a great deal of control of the money and business and you know, production and prices through unelected boards, both local and state, such as the Federal Reserve, executive departments, and in most major markets in the country, there's some kind of planning council or planning board that has a lot to say about what kind of business you would open if you're trying to create a new business. Also, there are massive programs for social spending, which are the largest part of the United States budget, and nobody ever talks about that because it's Medicare, Medicaid, you know, and all the HUD funding, you know, and so forth are off budget in the sense that we don't talk about it. But the social spending programs are enormous and are going to begin to take enormous bites of the U.S. federal budget in the future. So there is a lot of control of business and of – and when I say business, people think, oh, it's you're trying to control insurance companies or whatever. What it is it's a lot of inputs to a market which should, in its pure sense, be determining supply and demand for everything. And so that's all I'll say in terms of arguments against this. My point here is that through 70 or 80 years with Republican and Democrat administrations, this is the existing situation that we have. This is the status quo, an enormously powerful federal government and a lot of controls on supply and demand without getting too complicated. And as I've asserted many times, which people have a huge problem with, but I'm going to keep asserting because I think it's really important because I think it shows the folly of political labels. A politician or person who believes in maintaining the current system or adding to it is in fact conservative, since conservatives by definition wish to maintain the status quo. What's the alternative to the Democratic Party, which refers to itself as progressive, but is in fact interested in maintaining and growing the status quo? What is the alternative to the Democratic Party if they're the conservative party? President Trump uses executive orders, not legislative outreach, which is very similar to President Obama. He has added to the federal deficit and spending deficits. He wants to initiate a spending program for infrastructure, which doesn't even include the quote-unquote wall, and part of which includes quote-unquote rolling out 5G. And despite a recent Pew poll touted by CNN as proving Americans are, quote, pessimistic about the Trump presidency, in fact, Republicans are more likely to approve of the president's policies and performance, except for his ability to work with Congress, in almost every poll. And yet his policies are really status quo policies in terms of funding programs. He just wants to fund them through the executive branch, which, by the way, cuts directly against people who claim to be supporters of the United States Constitution, in which the executive was never intended to be this powerful, right? So one might ask, well, okay, these young people all want these new programs. How are we going to pay for them? As a precursor to an argument, and I would just say this. First of all, how does the government get money? It gets money through taxes and the sales of bonds or the sales of debt. Every now and then, sales of government assets are also included in that, where we lease lands rich in natural resources like oils and various metals. Natural gas is what I'm talking about when I say oils. And to quote Thomas Sowell, bonds are claims on future tax revenue. So when they talk about selling bonds, bond sales to finance what government wants to do, remember, they are really just a claim on a future tax revenue. So generally, bonding debt and pushing to say deficits don't matter. Really, what you're doing is you're forcing higher taxes in the future, because if the economy doesn't grow, or if you keep slowing down the process of supply and demand, and the economy grows slower and slower, that means higher tax revenues. That's the only argument I'm going to make that some people might perceive as anti-socialist. So this is a question for you, and if you're on the right, I think it's very, very important. What's the argument against borrowing and spending by Democrats if Republicans have been borrowing and spending too? And I don't think there is one, because I think it shows the basic principle and the basic lack of principle with the so-called opposition party, which at this point is the Republicans, and the bankruptcy of the Republican Party when it comes to being able to oppose the conservative status quo building direction of the Democrats. If many younger people in this country think spending and borrowing for free education or free health insurance sounds like a good idea, if they think giving people with less a little more and getting it from the people who have the most, right? What are the arguments against doing that? And when we talk about 2020 and the current time frame, let's say that 2020 is shaping up to be a referendum on issues or ideas like those advocated by Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez and others. No matter what you think of the ideas, what are the arguments against those ideas? Who and what will be the opposition? Are Republicans making cogent arguments against such policies? Well, let's look at what is actually going on. President Donald Trump has increased the federal budget by spending more money and cutting taxes, quote unquote. And that has to be qualified because they call that conservative economics or supply side economics. It is not classic economics. So a lot of people think supply side economics is classic economics. Supply side economics allows for deficit spending based on the theory that if we borrow to give tax cuts, it makes the economy grow and then it pays for itself. That's not classic economics. Classic economics would call for cutting the budget and then cutting taxes and freeing up this force of nature referred to as the economy or the cloud created by the laws of supply and demand. That's not what the Republicans are doing. What they're doing is essentially a Keynesian idea of quote-unquote priming the pump by giving people tax refunds or tinkering with the tax code, which in a sense is the state making decisions about how the economy is going to be regulated and controlled. How is that capitalist? Just an interesting question. Last year, the U.S. federal government, under President Trump and Republican leadership in both houses of Congress, spent almost $4.1 trillion. That is going to increase in 2019. In 2018, that amounted to about a $778 billion deficit. The federal debt is now $21 trillion, and the U.S. GDP is somewhere around $20, $21 trillion. You hear these politicians talking about economic growth all the time. Our debt-to-GDP ratio is 105.4% and going up. And so far, we still have a good credit rating because while we have a very high debt to GDP ratio for us, Japan's is double ours. And so everyone says, well, Japan doesn't have any problems. So, what's the big deal? So we are able to continue to sell bonds to finance our debt. Suddenly, Republicans are not making arguments against the Federal Reserve, another regulatory agency, and really the agency which has complete control of our money. So Republicans are not making arguments against the Federal Reserve printing more money by maintaining low interest rates, despite complaining about that kind of policy under the socialist Barack Obama administration. In fact, President Trump threatened to fire the head of the Fed when the Fed head considered the prospect of higher interest rates. The president said, we can't have that. So again, we're pulling levers at the federal level. We're not allowing the system to work. And the Republicans don't make arguments, intellectual arguments, against doing what we've been doing for 70 years in this country. We hear campaigns basically from the president and other Republicans, which didn't work, which come down to name-calling and spewing misinformation. Are the Republicans, as conservatives, simply a light version of socialist Democrats and therefore defenders? If you're a Republican, can you make an argument against modern monetary theory? What do you know about it? What about single-payer health? Can you make an argument against that? What about universal basic income? How would you make an argument against that? And if you did, how would you guard against the possibility that a Congress would take – and a Republican Congress would take that idea and turn it into a VAT tax and not get rid of the existing structure of social programs? The idea of a UBC is basically if the federal government does this, mail out checks, why do we need all these programs and all these people? Right? What about giving people free college? And I'll ask again, what is a Republican and what is a conservative? You have a president now talking about funding infrastructure programs. How is that a Republican concept? It certainly isn't a Calvin Coolidge idea, let's say. It is not what some people, I think, would consider a conservative. Where do these labels come down on the political spectrum? I don't think they have a spot on the political spectrum. And yet, both parties make a conservative or a liberal the arch enemy of the party, rhetorically speaking and emotionally speaking. And so we get nowhere because the liberal is the arch enemy. Well, You know, the liberals aren't really liberal and the conservatives aren't really conservative. Or maybe what we could say that they're all conservatives in that they are all interested in making the federal government and the state governments larger and more powerful and have more to do with this process of buying and selling, which we refer to as the economy. What things do the conservatives advocate for? And that's what you have to look at. And that's what, as you look at this stuff and as you look at party labels and as you look at where we're headed and what kind of country we're going to be, again, tremendous support for these collectivist ideas or socialist ideas. I shouldn't say collectivist because that's really not what it means. It means government control of this process of buying and selling. And there's a lot of support from younger people who are going to make up the new, the new middle-aged and the bulk of the people in this country. So here's the thing. I am not going to close the podcast with arguments because I think the arguments have to be developed and I don't hear them or see them in the Republican Party. I hear and see people who support an individual. I hear and see people who support populist economic systems using this tool that controls the economy that is called the federal government when those processes really should be free to find their own levels. And I don't hear too many arguments. All I hear is Constitution, Constitution, Constitution from the right. And all I hear is equality, inequality, and we have to help people from the left. And we're not finding our way to, the future. And what is dying out is the Constitution for those who support it without really knowing much about it. And what is dying out is also basically a free market in the country as a solution and capitalism in this country, which, does it or does it not have the potential to lift people out of poverty? Not going to answer that question because I'm tired of answering that question. And I'm tired of people in media answering that question or saying, because we said so. That's not going to work anymore. People who believe in capitalism and believe in freedom, let's say, believe in at least the liberty and the sovereignty of the individual and believe that the economy is overregulated and has been for 70 years, you're going to have to find the arguments yourself. All the printing at the Bob Davis Podcast is handled by Cartridge World. And why? Because they can save you 30% compared to the big box stores on print cartridges, ink, etc. And Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. Personally, I think they are better than new. I've said that many times. And they deliver on qualifying orders here in the metropolitan area. And they can take care of you if you are in other parts of the country listening to the Bob Davis Podcast. So listen up. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway if you're in the North Metro, or you can just call them at 763-420-6632 or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So yeah, it's not as simple as saying Venezuela as an argument against socialism. It is time to develop some definite arguments, and I don't hear them in certain circles where you would think they'd be doing opposition. And I'll do more podcasts about it, but it's time to open up a conversation about solutions to political problems. And, they have to go beyond rhetoric. Thanks for listening to podcast 798 as we near podcast 800, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Come so far, feel so all this time I've been waiting for, and who we are, where we're going to, all this time. So far, come so far, yeah. So me know when we get there, if we get there. Let me know when we get there.